Say hello to a new friend.
Excuse me.
On an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How are we doing this beautiful, beautiful day? A little music there from Joe and Woody and the boys of the Road Crew. Check out their tunes at Road Trip Inspiring Music, if you will, at roadcrew66.com. Hey, well, the idea is not to step on toes, but we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas and Christmas traditions, the American style. This morning is our countdown to Christmas, and then tomorrow morning, we're going to share a couple stories from the World Wars that I think you might find a little bit interesting about Christmas. Hey, Christmas today in America is a national holiday, and it's a blending of Christianity, stories from the Bible, and just rampant commercialism. From Black Friday sales to commercials designed to instill guilt if we don't buy, you can fill in the blank. But for many folks, it's a time of tradition, childhood memories and family gatherings, and a time for reflection and for savoring the moment. And of course, for some politicians, it's a season to stump for votes by proclaiming that they are warriors in a battle to save Christmas. A good politician knows that there is power in sowing seeds of dissension, even during a season that's supposed to be about the Prince of Peace. And then there are the folks that put Christ-like actions into Christmas by feeding the homeless or doing something special for our senior citizens that are alone during the holidays. Traditions are an important thing. They help give a nation a sense of unity, and they provide a new generation with memories that they can share with their families. But it might come as a surprise to learn that many of our Christmas traditions in America are kind of a recent phenomenon. And it might even be more surprising to learn that many of these traditions were crafted and sold by advertising agencies decades ago. As to the war on Christmas, well, that was waged several hundred years ago. In 1659, a notice forbidding the celebration of Christmas was issued in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. It read that, quote, "The observation of Christmas having been deemed a sacrilege, the exchanging of gifts and greetings, the dressing in fine clothes, feasting and similar satanical practices are hereby forbidden." Some of the other northern colonies enacted similar, if somewhat less restrictive, edicts. Many of our Christmas traditions are derived from the fact that we are a nation of immigrants. While Christmas celebrations were being forbidden in Massachusetts, in New Amsterdam, a Dutch colony where New York City stands today, holiday traditions were openly, even casually, celebrated. There were solemn church services that shared the story of Christ's birth, and there was the December holiday of Sinterklaas that is still celebrated today in the Netherlands. This is a Dutch gift-giving tradition where children set their shoes outside their homes to be filled by a visiting Saint Nicholas on December 6th. But in some homes, instead of shoes, stockings were hung at the mantle. Sound familiar? As New Amsterdam was essentially a company town with a relatively lax immigration policy, soon the Dutch were sharing their city with immigrants from throughout Europe. And this swirl of new traditions and the strong influence of the Dutch created a hybrid view of Christmas. Author Russell Shorto described it as, quote, "Among the English, the French, the German, the Swedish families of Manhattan, pressure was brought to bear on parents, and the Dutch tradition was adopted and later pushed forward a couple of weeks to align with a more generally observed festival of Christmas. Over time, Christmas and Sinterklaas, one an observation of Jesus' birth, the other honoring one of his most popular saints, were merged into each other. And after the Dutch left Manhattan in 1664, Sinterklaas was still celebrated in the region, and it was infused with English Christmas customs. Well, the arrival of more immigrants, they added their tradition, and, well, Christmas celebrations evolved. The Christmas that we celebrate today in America seems timeless, yet the intoxicating blend of carols and cards and presents and trees and mall Santas that have come to define our Christmas celebrations and that fill our head with childhood memories, they only came into being in the late 19th century. Americans did not even begin to conceive of Christmas as a holiday until the middle of the 1800s. Like many inventions of tradition, the creation of an American Christmas was a response to social and personal needs that arose of a particular trying point in history. In our case, it was a time of deep divisions and even civil war. And then people were also dealing with the unnerving transitions being wrought by rapid urbanization and industrialization. In other words, a lot of our traditions were brought about by a rapidly changing world, much like the era that we're living in today. Before the mid-19th century, Americans of different sects and different national origins kept the holiday, or did not, in ways they carried over from the old world. As I noted previously, Puritans, they were adamantly opposed to celebrations of Christmas. A lot of Virginia planters took the occasion to feast, to dance, to gamble, to hunt, and to visit with friends and distant family. And they perpetuated old Christmas traditions of celebrations and English manners. As late as the early 19th century, most Americans, churched or unchurched, or Northern, Southern, Western, they hardly took notice of the holiday at all. By the mid-century, however, new conditions had began undercutting local customs and creating a needs for some common and visible celebrations, a sense of unity, of community. And communication and transportation revolutions, trains and telegraphs, they made isolated parts of the country acutely aware of each other. And immigration was fueling a widening of ethnic and religious diversity that had been a part of American settlement from its beginning. Moral, political, economic tensions mounted among East, West, South. There was new questions about the very nature of the Republic. And then science began challenging religion. New wealth, larger markets, population swelled, pace of life accelerated. This intoxicating, tumultuous swirl of change caused many to simply long for a better time, a time in which they imagined that old and good values held sway in peaceful communities. It also made people reconsider the notion of community on a national scale. Well, at this crossroads of progress and nostalgia, America's found in Christmas a holiday that was like a salve for the soul. Many Christmases celebrated across the land began to resolve into a singular and widely celebrated holiday with set themes. It offered a retreat from the realities of daily life, and it was put in contemporary terms. They wove new symbols into the fabric to create something definitely their own, something truly American, an American holiday, if you will. And it began blending what seemed as contradictory terms of Christianity, of commercialism, and artisanship. And also, the tapestry included nostalgia and faith in progress. And there was a lack of theological or biblical authority that played into this, too. And this allowed Christmas to emerge as an event, special event, in a land of pluralism. It became a moment of national self-definition. Not surprisingly, the strongest incentive for creating such a holiday came from the areas most affected by the crush of social, economic, and technological revolution, especially in the northern cities, where the intimacy of village and town culture had been forcefully altered by city and factory life. there was a need for symbols of common purpose and shared past. Writers came to see holidays as a tool to meet these needs and to forge a national culture. New Year's Eve, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving, they had their merits, but Christmas emerged as the logical and affecting choice. And by 1850s, it had captured the national imagination. The Civil War intensified Christmas's appeal. Its sentimental celebration of family matched the yearning of soldiers and those they left behind. And its message of peace and goodwill spoke to the prayers of all Americans, Northern or Southern. But the Northern victory in 1865, as much as the war situation itself, determined the popularity and shape of American Christmas. Now, unchallenged in the sphere of national identity making and in control of the publishing trade, customs and symbols came to stand for American Christmas. Today, we look back and see this as a broad and unified development, but that's only in retrospect. Most interesting is the way details of the holiday appeared through accident and personal genius, and each custom has its own history, and over time merged with others to create the full-blown national holiday that we enjoy today. As early as 1832, Harriet Martineau had identified what would become one of the most familiar symbols of the American Christmas. She had little doubt that the Christmas tree would become one of the most flourishing exotics of New England. And by the 1850s, many Americans, not just New Englanders, had fallen in love with the German custom. Some had seen Christmas trees for the first time when they had toured Germany and recreated the experience of German Christmas celebrations for their friends at home. Others viewed them firsthand in the home of German immigrants. And of course, the growing media introduced the custom widely, inspiring Americans to adopt the tradition as their own. As the tree gained in prominence in front parlors, it also assumed a place in the marketplace. During the 1850s, town squares began to bristle with trees cut just for seasonal profits. And, well, soon the German Christmas tree receded and it became Americanized and became a part of an American Christmas celebration. Even in the homes of, quote, Hebrew brethren, Christmas trees bloomed, noted a Philadelphia newspaper in 1877. By 1900, one American in five had a Christmas tree for their celebrations. And at first, the decoration of these fragrant evergreens reflected the whim of tradition. Celebrants added nuts or strings of popcorn, beads, lemons, candies, homemade trinkets. But widely read newspapers and ladies' magazines raised the standards for ornamentation. Homely affections gave way to more uniform and sophisticated ones. One newspaper article talked about using cotton batting dipped in a gum arabic to give a frosting for tree branches. Tree decoration became big business. Shortly after the American Civil War, businesses began importing large quantities of ornaments from Bavaria and from Germany. These were sold on street corners and fashionable stores. Street vendors hawked ornaments in bright colors. There was tin was cut in all imaginable shapes. Glass blowers created angel wings. Christmas trees were decorated as never before. And this gave rise to something else, Christmas cards. R.H. Peace, a printer and variety store owner who lived in Albany, New York, he's given credit for this creation. He began distributing the first American Christmas cards sometime around 1850. And the cards had a common theme. Other printers jumped on board. It usually was a family scene. The images on its four corners made no allusion to poverty, cold, or hunger. I should kind of clarify this. This was the American Christmas card. English had been doing Christmas cards for a decade longer. Theirs were a little bit different. Pictures of Santa, reindeer, dancers, Christmas presents, Christmas food, suggested the bounty and joys of the season as the cards evolved. But it was Louis Prang, a German immigrant, a very astute reader of the market, if you will, that expanded the sending of cards on a grand scale. He arrived in America about 1850, became a printer, and by 1870, he owned 2/3 of the steam presses in America, and he perfected color printing processes. He distributed trade cards by the thousands at expositions, like, and in London. And he's, while in London, he had an agent suggest, why not add a Christmas greeting to your cards? Well, in 1875, he did that. And the rest, as they say, is history. He saw his cards as small, affordable works of art for the common man. And he had hoped that they would stimulate a growth in culture in rural America. And he began sponsoring competitions, contests, if you will, for Christmas card designs. And by 1890, Christmas cards had become so popular that almost all printers were cranking them out by the thousands. And Christmas cards also made modest but suitable presents. So now we have decorated trees and cards. But what about gifts? Gifts had played a relatively modest role in Christmas in the past. But the blending of Christian tradition of the three wise men, the growth of commerce and consumerism, well, made Christmas an ideal time to encourage people to buy gifts. Through charitable gifts, they sought at least symbolic solutions to the problem of economic poverty and peace, individual conscience. Gift-giving itself became controversial. It's perceived as a worrisome materialistic perversion of a holy day. Throwback to the Puritan era, if you will. But these religious concerns did not stem the growth of Christmas commerce as we can see today. It started really, again, around the 1850s. Businessmen, to exploit the season, began taking out whole-page ads promoting gift-giving. Well, we can't have gifts without Christmas paper. Americans moderated the relationship with commerce and giving by wrapping the gifts. The custom had been merely to give a gift unadorned and uncovered, but a present hidden in paper heightened the effect of the gesture. Wrapping also helped designate an item as a gift. Grand stores began to wrap gifts purchased from their stock in distinctive colored papers, tinsel cords, and bright ribbons as part of their delivery services in the cities. This took place all 1880s, 1890s. We have much more we could share on this, and I'll probably do a blog post pretty soon on the rest of Christmas. But let's fast forward just a little bit, because we are running a little bit over time. It was in the late, early 20th centuries that we see the development of Santa Claus as a linking to Christmas, even though we had the Dutch origins. Santa Claus, with his fur-trimmed red hat, sack full of toys, the reindeer, the sleigh, his home at the North Pole, well, he's emerged over the years as a major folk figure, if you will. We first see him in America in the 1820s in Clement Moore's An Account of a Visit from St. Nicholas. And by the 1850s and 60s, artists and writers had given wide circulation to the genial and generous American saint that Moore had introduced. Thomas Nast was an artist, and his fanciful Christmas drawings widened the sphere of Santa's rule. And Moore added another touch, 8 reindeer to pull his sleigh. Nast also gave him a workshop and ledgers to record children's conduct, and he made him taller and dressed him in red. And then others began adding little touches like the North Pole elves, a wife. Some stories even said that he had children. Well, my friends, there's so much more I could share with you about Christmas. But let's wrap this up quite simply by saying Christmas is a grand time. It's a great time for memories, for celebration, and, well, for reflecting on the message of Christ. Pure and simple. It's a time of memories. It's a time of giving and a time of being grateful and a time of, the Bible puts it this way. We are blessed so we can be a blessing unto others. That's not just financial, even though that's something we can contribute to. My friends, I hope you enjoyed this program this morning. And tomorrow, we are going to have a program for you about the couple Christmas celebrations quite unique in the World Wars. I hope you've enjoyed this program this morning. And we're going to wrap this up. We ran a little bit later. I hope you enjoyed the show. Do you have any... Well, thank you. Anything I can, questions I can answer for you while you're while we're here this morning? If not, we'll button this up. And please tell your friends, like say, this is an embryonic program, podcast. Yesterday I had a lot of technical difficulties and I'm sure it showed. And I do apologize for that little bit of unprofessionalism. But we're here this morning and I'd sure like to hear your input, what you'd like to see from these programs. And please tell your friends, invite them, come along. Remember, the programs are archived here on Podbean, and they're also shared on the Jim Hinckley's America Facebook page and soon on the Jim Hinckley's America website. Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Please invite your family. Invite your friends. This is everything about Jim Hinckley's America is a shared adventure. That's the whole idea behind everything I do. To inspire adventures and to share the adventure. And I look forward to tomorrow, and let's hope we have no technical difficulties. I think I'm going to have a little bit of an inspirational program for you tomorrow morning. Take care, and until we meet again, vaya con Dios. Adios.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
And I understand you have a podcast as well. Hey, we want to give a shout out to Connie Eccles. Of the Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba, Missouri. Sure wish I could share a holiday with those fine folk. We're sure giving them some thought. Well, until we meet again, my friends, adios.